give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will recount all of your wonderful deeds. I will be glad and exult in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High. Psalm 9, verses 1 and 2. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Dad Life 365. I'm your host, Manuel Mathis. I want to thank you guys so much for tuning in on this Easter week. Yes, we are approaching Easter. It's coming up on Sunday, and I am so excited to know that all the people listening to this will be gearing up to go to Easter service at the church that you will attend, Lord willing. But with it being Easter, I do want to talk about something that pertains to Easter. Now, at the end of the day, anything that's in the Bible will eventually point to Easter and the cross and the resurrection and all that is good about it. But this is more on the topic of, you know, as men, as we reflect on Easter and as we reflect on Good Friday, which is coming up here in a couple days, but with Easter coming and Good Friday happening soon, I think one word that kept popping up in my mind was gratitude. Now, a little backstory to me and how this led to why I want to talk about this today. So, I was raised in a Christian home, as I mentioned before. Now, I find it interesting, I know a little side note to the side note to get to the main point, but I find it interesting when I hear people say, I was a Christian growing up, but I never read my Bible. It's kind of like, how are you a Christian then? Like, I don't understand how they correlate. Just say that you grew up in a Christian home. Like, you weren't really a believer. Like, you followed what your parents said then, because you didn't really know what the instructions of the Lord were. You're just basing upon... Anyways, so that's way too far into the weeds. That's a whole nother podcast episode, which I should probably do soon. Is how to talk about your Christian faith with your kids and how to get them to see the truth of the gospel. And they don't make the error and say, I was Christian my whole life. No one's a Christian their whole life. Anyways, I digress to the first thing to get to the main thing. So when... as it happened that I came to faith, I don't know exactly when, but I know that once I left college because I was asked to leave because of some extracurricular activities I was doing, aside from just going to school, I was allegedly selling drugs. But anyways, when I got suspended, I went back home and I knew... what was going on? Like, I knew it was the Lord calling me to himself, and I knew that I needed to clean my life up, and I knew that I needed to give myself to the Lord. But then the time came where I was like, is this something I want to actually believe? Right? Which I think is a good question. You just don't want to go in because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do, right? I don't want to be the type of Christian that just believes it because my parents told me this was the truth, right? I wanted to take Christianity by the horns and be like, okay, this is mine now. This isn't just something that my parents told me about. This is actually something that I hold to as truth because it is true, right? It's not true because my parents said so, type of thing. My parents weren't my authority anymore, right? So what I ended up doing is I ended up looking into Christianity, obviously, read books for it and against it, more for, didn't read too many against, did read a lot of articles or listen to a lot of people. I still listen to debates today of people as why they're not Christians and stuff, and clearly I'm not convinced because I'm currently a believer, but yeah, I dived in, and not only did I dive into Christianity, I dove into other religions, so Mormonism, I looked at Islam and Judaism, just in their reasons as to why they don't believe in the Messiah and different things like that. So I didn't go too far into Judaism, but I did dive deeper into Islam and I did dive deeper into Mormonism. Now, I know a lot of people that are probably thinking, like, why even Mormonism? Like, I grew up in Las Vegas, and there's a lot of Mormons in Vegas, and I actually went to high school with a Mormon. It was a Christian school, but she was a Mormon, and according to her, they're pretty much the same thing. Knowing what I know now, they're absolutely not the same thing. But I didn't really dive into, like, the polytheistic religions, and I had my reasons for that. I don't need to go into details about it now. But as I was going through all this, and as I was trying to figure out my own path, I ran into a guy by the name of Lee Strobel. Now, Lee Strobel, I'm sure you've heard the name. He's been on the, I think it's a Sean Ryan show. I think they actually have a movie out about it now, or a documentary out about it, called, I believe it's Case for Christ is the name of the movie. It might not be a movie. I think it is. I think I've seen it. But I started reading those. So, Case for Christ essentially is a book where this guy named Lee Strobel, who was an atheist, and his wife became a Christian. So he decided to check into Christianity because he was an atheist, and his wife became a believer, and he was like, "This is ridiculous. I'm going to prove this religion wrong to her so that she'll stop being a Christian." And after doing detailed research on his own, he concluded that Christianity's true. So, I wanted to read him because I find it interesting that an atheist became a Christian due to evidence. Right? So I started reading all of his books. Started with Case for Christ, Case for Jesus, or Case for the Real Jesus. And then there was, Case for Jesus, Case for the Real Jesus, Case for Easter, Case for a Creator. So I read all those, and I was just just wholeheartedly reading one after the other. And then over time, I'm like, okay, like, there's insurmountable evidence that whatever's written in this Bible has been backed up historically and evidentially to where it's like you'd have to deny something that's right in front of your face right now. The historical science behind it's just too grand to say to deny it. Right? And you got other stories of people doing similar things, like I believe his name is Sean McDowell does the same thing. The Evidence That Demands a Verdict. I never read that book, but I heard about it. But that's where my Christian life started. Right now, I'm much further and much further along. I actually don't even believe in evidential apologetics anymore. Got a bit into William Lane Craig. Smart guy, great guy. Don't have any problem with him. Just don't agree with him on some theological issues. Started reading him, then got into more theology stuff here and there. But the point I'm getting at is this: through my studies, a lot of the time where everything always ended up was back at the resurrection. Not so much the crucifixion, right? But the resurrection. Now, the crucifixion is important, and it is an event that happened in time. But what I always found interesting is 1 Corinthians 15. It says, if Christ did not raise from the dead, our faith is futile because we're still in our sins. Right, so it seems like everything hinges on this fact that if Jesus rose from the dead, then everything else in the Bible is true. Right, and that's where it seemed to lead. Right, but then I started studying, like crucifixion stuff and Romans and how they were really good at killing people and just the grotesque nature of crucifixion alone and how gross it was and how. Muslims, well, not all Muslims, but some Muslims, well, all Muslims believe Jesus didn't actually die on the cross, right? That's what they teach. They teach that Jesus never died on the cross. And they call it the swoon theory, where he got revived and came back. And there's actually evidence of there's been people that happened to where they crucified him and then stopped and then tried to revive him and no one ever made it, right? Because with the best doctors and the best care, they still died. Right, so could it have happened? It could have happened, but no, it did not happen. Right, there's no evidence to say that it happened. Others say that, it wasn't actually Jesus, it was someone that looked like Jesus. And Muslims come up with their own reasons as to why Jesus never actually died on the cross. I don't believe that he actually did. But that's another, again, something different. My point is that this Christ who died on the cross, that definitely died on the cross, had to have risen from the dead. Because if Christ died, then all my hope died with him. Right, if he never came back. Right, the death of Christ secures our salvation, as some say, and the resurrection assures us of our salvation. It's the assurance of our faith. It's bound up in this resurrection, right? And so when we as Christians think about that, now I know we're very imbalanced. I talked about this around Christmas time. And James White, an apologist who I listen to now, has mentioned how Christians get really good theology around Christmas because we actually contemplate the incarnation, right? And then Easter, we talk more about Jesus' resurrection, but not the fact that he was also God in the flesh, who tabernacled among us, who lived as a human being, and dealt with all the things on a very subjective level, but dealt with everything that we're dealing with, right? Frustration, anger, all the emotions, do your little emotional wheel, all that we go through. Those are the things that Christ went through. And, he went through it not only as a man, but also as God in the flesh, right? So picturing that, having that in thought, in mind, knowing that he left his position to come to this earth so that he might save us, right, and show his power. And when you think about that, right, it's like I like to think of it like this, like when I see one of my kids needing help. Sometimes I'm too lazy to do it myself, and so I ask another kid to do it, and they will, and it's great. It's wonderful because I don't have to do anything. But there are some things that requires me, right? Like the other kids can't do this. Like I have to be the one to help, right? Like I have to be the one to take care of this, and so they're much appreciative that I will get up and do that for them. Right? Our sin, no one else could help us with it. Right? God saw, right? God decreed, God ordained, worked out a way for us to be made right with him, but he also knew it's only something that he could accomplish. So when I look at it like that, and I think about it like that, just as my kids are grateful that I got up off the couch and helped, or got up off of whatever I was on, or doing whatever I was doing, it could be even cooking, the fact that I got up and did something for them, they're grateful because they say, "Thanks, Dad." Right? And so think about this Jesus who did these things, right? And that's why I read Psalm 9, verses 1 and 2. Because if you listen to it, listen to what it says once again. It says, "I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will recount all of his wonderful deeds." I will recount. So I will go over them. I'll recount them. All of his wonderful deeds, all the wonderful things that God has done for you. And obviously, the consummation of all those good works are found in the cross, right? But then it says in verse 2, "I will be glad and exult in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High." Gratitude is something that I lack, but I love contemplating it now during this time because how could you not be? Or like, how could you not be grateful for what Christ has done for you in this time? I can't envision myself kind of just going through the emotions, just going through the motions for Easter. I have before, right? But as I get older and I contemplate it more, it's like, how do you not get the praise from me? Right? I mean, listen to who this God was that came down. Listen to what it says, what else it says about this God that came down as a human to die for us. Right? Listen to what it says about him in verse 7. The Lord sits enthroned forever. He has established his throne for justice, and he judges the world with righteousness. He judges the people with uprightness. So, when you read the book of, when you read Psalms, I learned this in college, but when you read Psalms, you should look at God as primarily three things. He's creator, king, and judge. So here clearly he's talking about God as judge, right? But if you think about those three offices, right? Creator, king, and judge, all those are above laypersons, right? So even today, when there's a judge, we just can't treat the judge any way we want, right? We ask to approach the bench, right? When they come in, everyone stands, and then they sit down once that judge has already sat down. So there's a bit of reverence and respect and awe that we have for someone who's a judge in the courts today, right? It doesn't matter what level. Obviously, Supreme Court gets the greatest amount of respect, but all of them really, like, we don't treat them any differently as far as the amount of respect they get from us, right? Like, if you were to meet someone and they told you they were a judge for this district court or whatever, you'd be like, whoa, right? Like, that'll at least take you back for a second, and you would have some respect for that person, some reverence for that person because of the role that they play in this world, right? And then we look at the Bible and we think, God, the judge of this world, who's enthroned forever. His throne where he sits and judges does not get removed. It's always there. It always has been and always will be there. Right? So when you think about a God like that, who said, I'm gonna step in, I'm gonna step into the layperson's life. Who doesn't have to do that? And you know what? Even though I can judge them and I ought to judge them because all my judgments are just and right. He judges the people with uprightness. He's not a corrupt judge, but a good judge. Doesn't take bribes. Doesn't do favors. Doesn't make decisions based off of how his name could be made better. There's no corruption here. And we know that a human judge gets corrupted, but yet we still show them reverence and respect. This God, this judge doesn't do any of that. And yet he decides to become a person himself. We ought to be grateful. I am so grateful. And you know, I really bring this up because there's a lot of times I don't express a lot of gratitude and I complain. That's the antithesis to gratitude, right? It's complaining. I even told my wife not too long ago, I need to get a gratitude book or a journal where I could just journal things that I'm grateful for. And a few weeks ago, one of the elders at my church just had said that he has a journal like that. And every day in that journal, he writes about things he's grateful for. Every single day, he says he tries to find at least three things to be grateful for every day. And he was honest. He said some days it is hard to find three things, but he still finds it. He finds three things he's grateful for daily. And he said ever since he started doing that, it has changed his perspective on the day. As hard as it may be, it's crazy that you start looking for things to be grateful for. And I hope this Sunday, as you listen to the Word of God preached, hopefully, they talk about the resurrected Savior, that you're not only grateful for what Jesus did for you, but you're grateful that there's so many people there listening to that message, and that God is going to grab hearts and new believers are going to be made this Sunday. More baptisms are going to be done. More people could join in on communion. Getting prepared for that final feast that we're going to have with the Lamb that was slain before the foundation of the world, as it says in the book of Revelation. So, as you prepare for Sunday, or even Friday, as you prepare for Good Friday, hopefully one of the words that comes in your mind is grateful, gratitude. I hope you have it. I know I sure do. I am very grateful for what God has done for us on the cross. Very grateful for Calvary. I hope you are too. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe, share, like, do all those things that make podcasts more popular, I guess. I don't know. If you are listening to this consistently, that means you appreciate it enough. Maybe you could share it with someone who may be appreciative of it too. Because I enjoy doing it. I enjoy recording these episodes and talking. Don't forget to follow me on YouTube, but also follow me on Instagram. I actually post on Instagram quite a bit. I'm on there probably more than I should be. That's a different conversation. But next week, I am actually going to be talking about kids and their salvation and how we should talk to our kids about Christ and what that sounds like, what that looks like. Maybe not all of that, but we will begin that conversation. So that we are actually raising our kids to become a Christian and not raising them as if they already are a Christian. Right? Because you don't want to make that fatal mistake of them thinking they're already in when they haven't repented and believed the gospel. But that's for next week. But until then, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Until next week, I'm out.